Hello and welcome to Dial F a Flanger, which is a comic book chat show. And today it's part of JL April again. JL April. Yes, and I'm joined today with Martin Gray, and we're going to look at one of the chapters of JL 8. It's a DC crossover that happened through the annuals from 1999, all the way back then. But I know Martin, he would have bought this one off the stands probably, and so did I. Yes, but we're going to talk about the Aquaman annual number 5. So, Martin, how are you, and what do you think of DC 8?
I'm very well, thank you. I did indeed buy these annuals off the stands, and I mean, I've not even reread them since then, but I bought them at the time. I remember I enjoyed them. I mean, in preparation for this podcast, I've read not just one comic, it was three comics. So I've read this annual. I've read the opener, the JLA annual, and the finale in Martian Manhunter annual, which I won't go into any detail on either because you'd be discussing them elsewhere. But there's so much more fun than I thought. I mean, Len Kaminski, who seems to have been running the crossover, is excellent. You know, he didn't do much at DC as far as I know, apart from Scare Tactics, but of course he created War Machine over at Marvel. And he's just so funny in terms of, you know, his DC lore, the witticisms, good plots in all the stories. It's really, really reminds me of how much I enjoyed this period of the JLA.
Yeah, I remember when these came out and they were sort of at odds because the tone of the JLA series at the time, and this wasn't too far into it. It was a very cool series. Like it was all very hot at the time, which is weird for something cool. But everyone, you know, really enjoyed the series. And then you get this series of annuals, which have a kind of less than serious tone, perhaps.
I think it's exactly what was needed, though, because, I mean, by this point, yeah, we must have been somewhere after the second year, because we had the added members like Steel. Yeah, we had Grant Morrison doing their huge, great fighting gods here and there storylines, and you've got, in the regular comic, you've got characters like Huntress, who is super serious, joining. And it's just nice to get away from it and just to have a crossover where you have balanced hanging from that big annual logo, couple of daft bananas. I mean, even the title JL Ape, it's really clever. And yeah, I think this is, you know, a nice change of pace for the series, even though, well, not part of the series, but series adjacent.
Yeah, so let's have a look at this cover. So all the covers for the JLA annuals were done by Arthur Adams, who draws a great ape generally. I mean, he's known for his Monkey Man and O'Brien series, which was sexy women and apes, which is really playing to his strengths. So yeah, what do you think of the cover here?
Well, I really, really like it. I mean, for one thing, I mean, I love this golden gorilla version of Aquaman swimming towards the reader. I mean, if you thought that Aquaman couldn't get any less attractive than he was in the Peter David series, where he's wet, straggly hair, nasty beard, hook hand, here he's just this big, hairy lump. And he looks fantastic. He looks really brilliant. And in the background, well, almost the foreground, we've got this huge, great gorilla-faced undersea submarine, as opposed to an overseas submarine, which I hadn't realised on reading the comic inside was meant to be a gorilla's face. I mean, the inside, it looks to me like a dolphin to you.
Yeah, it changes shape. I mean, you can see the gorilla-ness of it in some shots, but it not as clearly as it's depicted on the cover. I mean, like, this submarine has a heavy set eyebrows and things like that above, and it's got a mohawk.
Absolutely. That's just what you need.
On a submarine. It's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think the colours are great. You know, the light green for the sea, the yellow for the lettering, and then you've got all the gorillas in the background, apart from one are in grey, so this gorilla villain, who's called Trafalgar, he's popping in colour. And yeah, I mean, it really makes me want to read the comic. I mean, a million points to you for remembering Monkey Man and O'Brien, because I'd never read an issue. Vaguely aware of it. I remember the title. And it sounds like it was maybe his spin on Angel in the Ape or something.
Yeah, it was probably a little bit more adventurous than Angel in the Ape. Like, yeah, it was probably more in the Hellboy realm, I guess, as far as the tone of it. Sort of came out of the same thing that launched Hellboy. So, yeah, it's worth a read. It's very enjoyable. It's only three issues.
This is really bloomin' heck. I thought it was much more of a big thing than that. So, yeah, I'll try and track it down on some kind of legal app where I can buy it.
All right, yeah, and this there's a really prominent use of green, which contrasts nicely with the yellow. And that green, spoilers, continues throughout the comic pretty much.
It does. I mean, I much prefer when underwater scenes are coloured with sort of nice bright colours and rather than quartz realistic murky tones. Much, much nicer.
Yeah, so well, let's get into the comic. So it's written by Jon Ostrander. According to the creator box, it's delineated by MD Bright. It's made legible by Dick Giordano, and it has hues added by Alex Blayart and Rob Rowe. And the calligraphy is by Janice Chiang. And second banana is Harvey Richards, and top banana is Kevin Dooley. So this was, Kevin Dooley was known for being a bit cheeky in his creator credits and things like that. So this is part of it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But what do we see on the splash page that starts it?
We see Aquaman Ape, I'm not sure what we're calling him. Arthur beating his chest in true gorilla style, got his holding his hook hand, harpoon hand up to the sky, and he's just, obviously enjoying his power now that he's Aqua Ape.
Yeah, it's interesting that all the elements of his costume are just there. They're just all incorporated into his furry body now. Like he still has the sort of half shoulder metal harness weirdness and his tiara. Well, I'm not sure if the right word, but yeah, sort of embedded in his
I
head
think
so
it
far.
is. Yeah, I
And
mean, that tiara was always so unfortunate, unpleasant, girly.
yes, got his A on his belt, his stylized A. Yeah, we see straight away he's an ape, and this is what's in store. And there's a little bit of a recap of how they got there, which I needed because I'd completely forgotten. So basically, there's something to do with Solovar and the United Nations, and there's an explosion, and all the JLA get turned into apes. We get a recap of that by MD Bright.
Yeah, I really appreciate that sort of thing because, John Ostrander, he's, given a bit of consideration to the readers who might not want to or might not be able to afford to buy all the annuals because they're, at least double the price of the regular issues, aren't they?
Yeah, but I mean, this is also during the time when John Fox was the substitute Flash, for the Flash title at that time.
All right, because when I was reading the two issues, there wasn't a lot of Flash in there, but I hadn't. That's why he had the dark Flash costume on. Didn't seem to immediately think Gorilla Grodd's behind this, because there seemed to be a bit of a mystery going on right through the end as to who's behind it all. And it's like, well, who would have killed Solovar? Gorilla Grodd, John Fox. That would make some sense.
Yeah, and it's the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern as well. But I love that they call John Johns the Martian Manape, and he's also affected. Even though he's a shapeshifter, he's affected by this.
He is affected, but he seems to sort of gain control of himself with a lot more precision again. I suppose you'd be talking about the Martian Manhunter annual with somebody, and that's just absolutely superb the way John works in that.
Yeah, so I will be covering the Martian Manhunter annual, the final part of JLA. I'm doing that with Frank, Diablo Frank. So yeah, you can look forward to that, Mark.
Well, that sounds brilliant. I mean, you've got, the renowned Martian Manhunter expert.
Yeah, but yeah, we get all these captions explaining how we got there. But basically, there's a MacGuffin that the apes are looking for, which will allow them to spread their apeness to other people across the planet, in mass. And we do see there's a half shot of Admiral Trafalgar, and then half a shot is the ape submarine Kong. So there it is there, but it's not as obvious as it is on the cover.
Paul, it looks like Pingu.
So yeah, they're off, and the sub is heading towards Atlantis because that's pretty much the only place in the DC universe you ever go if you're underwater. So yeah, what do you think of Admiral Trafalgar, damn your eyes.
He's great fun. I mean, he says that quite a lot, as if it's some, I mean, I know it's an expression, but I don't know whether he's meant to be sort of, a British seafaring ape, like, Trafalgar, Battle of Trafalgar, etc.
Yeah.
But no, he's great. But I mean, I don't know whether he's ever appeared before or since this crossover. I mean, I would love to be told that he has appeared elsewhere because he's a real character. He's just such good fun, and he's got like the original Brainiac. He's got a cute little monkey on his big ape back. It's repeating what he says, like instead of a parrot. He's fantastic. Do you like him?
I love him, and he's obviously a fan of the human pirates, but the cliche type, because he literally has a peg leg. He's got these little shoulder, or what do they call them? The sort of where they have the dangly
Epaulettes.
tassels, epaulets. Thank you,
Epaulettes,
Mark.
yep.
Yeah, and he's got a Admiral Trafalgar type hat. Yeah, he has a little monkey buddy on his shoulder. Yeah, and he speaks in total pirate cliche stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's the very model of a modern Major Manape.
Yeah, and he's really into the mission. Like he's loving it. He's underwater. He's got all these helmsmen, and he's going to talk at old time pirate at them all the time.
Well, I mean, yeah, because it's not like talk like a pirate day once a year, as he says all the time, and it suits him. He's good at it, and DC should just bring him back at once and give him a comic.
Well, I'm pretty sure this is the only place he ever appeared, and this comic has been sort of relegated for so long, but now it's been collected in a trade this very month.
I saw that. That's just typical of comic podcasts, synchronicity, getting out there. It happens. Except for
Yeah.
All Stars.
But now let's get into the Atlantis of it all. So at this stage, I guess this is picking up on stuff from the Peter David Aquaman. So we've got Mera and Aquaman don't seem to be together, but they're still friends. Volko is sort of, he's the number one advisor for everyone in Atlantis. And we've got Tempest, who is the former Aqualad, who this is when he was with Dolphin, and Dolphin is pregnant. So the female Dolphin, not a physical Dolphin. So
That would be brilliant.
that would be unethical. But anyway, so
Yeah, I enjoy the palace scenes, the palace scenes, because as we join the Vulcans, just telling Tempest to get out there, lead the charge, defend Atlantis, and maybe just sort of wanders in there and says, "Excuse me, but who's queen here?" And Vulko was like, "Apologies, Your Highness. I was hoping you would let us take you to a place of safety, as the people would wish." And she's, "Would you expect that of Aquaman?" And jolly well done, Mira, because she is in charge. She is the queen, whether or not she's with Aquaman or not. And I'm surprised that Garth didn't straight away go and get seek her counsel, because they're good friends. They always have been good friends. But yeah, I mean, the only thing I don't like about the scene with Mira is this outfit. What do you think of that?
it looks like it got caught in the lift door as she was leaving, and half of it tore off.
Absolutely. I mean, she's famously one of the best designed, sexiest women in comics, with her gorgeous red hair, lovely tiara, skin tight catfish suit, I suppose. And here they've just made her look like, don't know. I mean, she's not unattractive, but she just looks dopey and like she's dressed while drunk.
Yeah, no, it's not good. And but she is rocking really big hair in this issue.
Oh, utterly, utterly 80s, and this is well into the 90s. There's no excuse. She's maybe got a school of little snappers and sort of poofing her hair up as she walks. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, she'd belong in the B-52s quite easily.
Oh yeah, with a rock lobster.
Yeah. But then the apes attack, which sort of cuts short the dialogue. And they're shooting guns at people that make a bomp noise. But basically, when you get hit by this gun, it turns you into an ape, which is very convenient. And that happens to Volko. But if you are an Atlantean who gets hit by this gun, you can breathe underwater as an ape.
Absolutely, you can do whatever the story needs you to do. But I just think it's good that maybe we can sort of stop it happening to her with her hard water powers. And then the fact that she's thinking about calling them sea monkeys, I like that a lot. Maybe as a comic fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ostrander or the editorial, they had a list of all the jokes they could do, and they, even down to the title of 20,000 Apes Under the Sea.
Oh
And yeah,
yes.
they're going to hit all these jokes one by one. So Sea Monkeys comes up here. Yeah, so there's the skirmish. Mera is protecting people from getting turned into the apes. And when you get hit by this ray, you instantly become, a enemy of the Atlanteans and a friend of the apes, because Volko turns on us straight away.
Absolutely. You I think it was explained in the JLA comic, is that they become sympathetic to the apes' world view, and
Yeah,
somehow that translates into "we must take over the world."
I mean, it could have been better, who knows? But yeah, Tempest is
Well, yes.
checking in on his pregnant dolphin friend, and there's the whole, "Hey, you're a woman, you should stay out of it," and she's not having that either.
Quite right too. I mean, I'm back and forth on Dolphin, because I don't know whether you were reading Aquaman at the time, but I never liked the fact that she sort of, she was having a fling with Aquaman. Obviously, Aquaman should only ever be with Mira, but she was having a fling with him, and then either that ended or there was some kind of Venn diagram undersea overlap, and she was having an affair with Tempest. And at this point, yeah, she's having Garth's kitty. And I just think of her as the sea slapper, which I think is terrible, because she's not a sea slapper, she's sex positive. And she wasn't necessarily having them both at the same time, but there wasn't a decent period in between. And it's like basically father and son in terms of Aquaman and Garth. And
Yeah.
I'm going, yeah, no, I'm not a fan of Dolphin.
Yeah, I'd read the whole Peter David run at the time, but I mean, I remember in the interviews that he was going to use Dolphin, and he had picked up, like, one of the things he'd picked up was dolphins were fairly slutty, and the real dolphins are fairly slutty, and he thought that'd be fun to carry over. And I don't think it's aged well at all. It was terrible at the time, and now it's worse.
Yeah, oh gosh, I hadn't heard that. That's just really, I mean, it's creative thinking, but it's weird. Yes, unfortunate, to be polite, thinking. And I quite like it. I mean, I like it in the sense Garth's doing, you should get to the temple, go and be safe. You know, I'm going to help Mira. And she says, I'm pregnant, not disabled, I can help too. Now, I like the sentiment, you know, I'm pregnant, I can help too. I don't like the idea, you know, not disabled, as if disabled people couldn't help.
No, yeah. Another thing that hasn't aged that well. Yeah. Tempest is out of there rather than have a chat, and he gets attacked by... Do you remember Lagoon Boy? He gets attacked by Ape Lagoon Boy.
I mean, Lagoon Boy wasn't around at that time, so I don't know why they're using the term Lagoon Boy when you have an actual Lagoon Boy, unless that is actually Lagoon Boy turned into a Little Mermaid thing.
I think it must be. I think I think this probably coincides with the Eric Larson was on Aquaman, probably when this came out.
Yeah, underrated. Dan Jurgens went after Peter David, underrated. But the next panel, though, because you've got, get him Lagoon Boy, and he's going, by the Trident, Blubber Shiva, what is this? And then, you know, they've got this other thing, which seems to be the same character, but I don't think it is. It says Letty Foot, who I had to look up because I'd forgotten. And she was apparently another former girlfriend of Aquaman, Aqualad, rather, Tempest. And thank God, they're horny underwater folk.
But, so Mira's still fighting off many, many apes, some Atlantean, some apish from Gorilla City, underwater group. Anyway, but there's a mighty sound of Kreegar, and Aquaman enters the fray on a giant, fairly ordinarily drawn whale.
Yeah, that should have been a lot bigger moment. That should have been a splash page. And, you know, only looking at this for about a third, fourth time do I even notice the whale. It's like Aquaman ape looks quite spindly here. And then he makes this cry about defiling the waters and shouts out, Bundolo. Did you have to look up Bundolo?
I didn't bother. What did you find out?
Supposedly it was something that Tarzan used to shout sometimes. So I would imagine that's another ape gag, but just over my head.
Okay, yeah. All right. Ape deep cuts continue. Yeah, and the whale slams into the Kong, knocking it somewhat aside. Yeah, but Admiral Trafalgo is retaliating and blasts this poor whale with some sort of cannon. From the, what does he say? Amidships, begod.
Yeah, he kept saying begod. I mean, I'm not sure, is that some kind of corruption of by God or something? Begod. Yeah. He said that I've never in my life heard of that. And again, like yourself, I didn't bother to look that one up because it just seemed so silly. But that poor little monkey on his shoulder looks so scared.
I was amazed by the fact that what happened from this cannon blast, it turns the whale into a giant ape.
Everything turns into a giant ape. They might as well just spray the whole ocean and just get like billions of miniature krill apes or something like that, just biting everybody's head off and taking over the world.
The Admiral Trafalgar is getting on with the battle because he's yet. Belay that cheering, you damn gibbering sea monkeys. So we get the sea monkeys pun again.
Yeah.
And then he has a little bit of his motivation monologued here. We did as we had to do. I have dedicated me life and given parts of me anatomy to the greatest cause of our kind. But I take no satisfaction in changing that magnificent creature. 'Twere me duty and I done it.
I mean, come on. I'm sure he says he's given a part of anatomy. I'm sure that he's just sort of deliberately had his leg taken off and just put a patch on. His eye is under that patch. He's just been Pirate King. One thing about this, though, I mean, in the next panel, we've got Mira, you know, sort of fighting off the ape still, and with a very wimpy-looking shield, and they're sort of underestimating her powers. I mean, I know back then we didn't see her quite as powerful as she became during the New 52, but she was still basically an underwater Green Lantern. She could have put up a huge shield.
Yeah, it's what the plot needed at this point. But yeah, Aquaman swings in. I don't know what he's swinging in on, but he looks like he's swinging in to rescue her and grabs her around the waist. And he's got his hook hand up as though it's connected to a rope or something, but it isn't.
Yeah, there's something like pink and energetic swirling around him. But I do like that he then, you know, he goes into all this business about being prime male leader of the tribe and you'll all obey him. Because I just love that John Ostrand is, you know, leaning into this, the fact that, you know, in the wild you would have your apes sort of fighting against one another to be the prime one. And we see a bit more of that coming up.
Yeah, so Tempest, he's the challenge, and then you get sort of two male apes fighting the law of Truth and Claw, and to see who is right to rule. And yeah, they completely give themselves over to their ape natures.
They do, and I think that Mark Bright did, and Lichty O'Donnell did some of the best work in the book on these pages, where you get them leaping at each other, and there's a lot of shadow over them, a lot of darkness and nastiness and scratchy panels, and the women looking totally panicked because they're such a two hugely powerful creatures. I mean,
Yeah.
I think at this point Aquaman hasn't got the mental powers as an ape, but I don't know whether Tempest has his magic, but he's not clever enough to use it. So it's just brute force under the ocean, and it's something to see.
It is a great panel, and the panels get completely chaotic to match the fight. But it looks like Tempest is winning till Aquaman kicks him into the wall. I don't know what wall it is. And he's about to stab him, but then Dolphin intervenes and said, "No, Aquaman, that's your friend, the father of my child. That's Gar." I don't know if that would stop him, really. But anyway, and Mera grabs his other arm and says, oh, his hook arm, "Listen to me. You usually follow your instincts, but which instincts are they? Who are you, Arthur? Who will you decide to be? Man, ape, king?" And he has a little think.
He does. He has a very elegant little
And what does he
and he
decide,
decides,
Martin?
"I am Aquaman. Aquaman, I am the king of the seven seas. I am Aquaman. And I do not bow to any man or ape, nor to the beast that dwells within. I am your king, and you will obey me." And he gets everyone chanting, "Aquaman, Aquaman!" And he's really in the leadership position, although he suddenly gains a very unpleasant pot belly. And yeah, everyone decides that's where they're going to leave, and we get another scene with the hero of the issue, the true star, Trafalgar.
He decides that they need to keep to their schedule and follow their mission, which is to find this crystal, the MacGuffin of the issue. So yeah, they sail off underwater to do that. And then John Ostrander decides to do a little bit of characterization about Aquaman and his present position. How does he feel about
Absolutely.
everything? Which is odd, but interesting.
It is interesting, it's like, you have me saying, you're preoccupied, Arthur, what is it? And Aquaman says he's thinking of Solovar, who was the king of Gorilla City, who was assassinated and kicked this whole thing off, probably by his own kind, assassinated by. And Aquaman's pointing out he wasn't a tyrant, he was a good king, they killed him anyway. I wonder sometime if it's worth it being king. And she asks, "Tell me, Arthur, do you like being king?" And I love it, he says. Most days, yes, I do. And for what it's worth, I actually think I make a pretty good king. But he points out he likes being a hero too on the surface world. And he thinks he's pretty good at that. So, just showing the complexities of his character. And it's a nice pause in an otherwise action-packed issue. It actually, it builds Aquaman's character up a bit. And it's showing that, these two, they're not together still. But as you say, they're still very, very good friends. And she actually says, You're a good friend. I mean, again, I'm still not digging the way that she's being drawn because she looks just like a dopey doll-faced woman. But it's an excellent scene. It ends with her winking at him and him looking like, totally full of affection. And by gum, she looks like Nicole Kidman in that final panel to me.
Yeah, she sure does. Yeah, and this would have been peak Nicole Kidman, I'd imagine, around 99.
Absolutely. So maybe they were, using a little bit, but I do. I think it doesn't help that the bottom of this crown or tiara. I mean, it might be Mark Bright's version of the classic one, but it looks like she's wearing sort of huge, great skull headphones.
It looks like you could really smash a window if you took it off and threw it around.
It really does, but I mean, it just shows these two have got chemistry. Whatever the situation, whatever the form they're in, they're meant to be together.
Yeah. Anyway, but he's going to lead, so it's time to go after the Kong and stop them from getting the crystal, which is the Eye of Poseidon. Yeah, and he says, "I know where I can get my hands on something that will help." So then we switch scenes to the Kong. I was thinking the Kong is one of you put dog treats in them, and it's a rubber thing you chuck in the backyard. That's what I think of when
Really?
I, yeah. Anyway, for the dogs to play with, and then they slowly get the treats out of it.
I
Sort
never
of,
knew that, by God.
yeah, it burns off their energy. But yeah, that's not relevant to this at this point. So yeah, Aquaman is on his way, but Tempest has been, he's basically joined the enemy forces at this point.
He has. He's a confused young man, but he gets his just desserts when he's sort of whittling away to Trafalgar, and then Trafalgar lifts up his peg leg and just blasts the heck out of him. Well, he doesn't actually hit Tempest, he hits this other guy who's some kind of diver or something. But
He's an Atlantean, I think, but I'm not sure. I mean, it's just like here, random guy who's going to get killed here.
he seems to have a scuba jacket. Why would he have a scuba thing on there?
I
Well,
don't.
probably he's got his head shield on. We'll find out when we listen to the other podcasts in JL April, I suppose. But it seems to me that Trafalgar is the character of the issue for John Ostrander.
Yeah. But you'd think a peg-legged gun would be very impractical, but I am reminded of I think it's Planet Terror, where a woman gets a leg amputated and gets a machine gun on her leg instead. So I don't know if you saw that. I think it was the part of Grindhouse.
Don't know Planet Terror, don't know Grindhouse, unfortunately. We're very innocent here in the United
Oh,
Kingdom.
this was it was a Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino project where they both decided to make
Oh, that's
trashy
right. I
movies.
think I saw, was there one actually called Grindhouse? I think I saw one of them.
It was
Everyone looked very sweaty.
the one with the car with Kurt Russell with it, who was killing people with his car.
Yeah,
Anyway.
I think I'm actually not a big Tarantino fan, but if it had this sort of thing, I'm there.
It was ridiculous. Yes, it was like, yeah, I've lost my leg. I'll get a machine gun instead. Anyway, but yeah, he it does work slightly better if you're an ape because you do tend to use your legs more like arms, more than people do.
Absolutely, and you have to be sitting down so you could just go into battle on a nice undersea bath chair.
Yes, but you see, he's basically ruling the roost underwater and bossing Tempest around.
Quite right too. I love that he's got a tiny little. You can see in the central panel on page 22 of the comic, he's got a cute little sort of ape drawing on his chest plate.
Oh yeah, he does. Yeah, tiny.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that previously, but yeah, he's just brilliant, honestly. But then we
Yeah.
have to go back to the other guys, Aquaman and Co., trying to sneak into their headquarters.
So they have another clash between Tempest and Aquaman. So Aqua Ape.
Yeah, I was trying to think of an ape pun for Tempest, but I can't.
No.
Oranga Tempest, no, doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't like the fact that the women in this, their job is to mostly calm down the ape men, which they're constantly doing. So as Tempest is swimming into fight, Dolphin swims up to him and tells him to be calm, and then the apes push the women out of the way and they clash and they go, you, and they're just coming and it looks like they're about to fight. Then they hug and he's like, oh, their sense of friendship has overcome all their ape instincts and now they're buds.
That is really nice because Dolphin, if she'd been on form, she wouldn't have been pleading. She would have just slapped him. That is Dolphin. But yeah,
Yeah.
when they went in the that was I'd forgotten that happened. And I turned the page and it's like big lug, hoo. And it's just a really charming moment because, obviously they've fallen out over the years as many times as Aquaman and Mira have split up, but they're always going to come back together as pals. And this is what we want. One of the things I really like on the art, which you see on this page particularly, is the big air on Aquaman's belt is sort of protruding right up into his big hairy yellow belly, and it just makes me laugh. More of this
That
kind of thing, please.
would hurt. Like as soon as you bent forward, you'd be stabbing yourself in the tummy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can't even cope with a regular size belt buckle sometimes, with my flabby old proportions. So, goodness knows what Aqua Ape will be like.
Yeah, but and he's got the trident at this point, which is what he went to get it before. Which I don't really care for tridents in Aquaman stories. Like they seem to be a
I
really
don't.
big deal in the movies.
Yeah, absolutely. But I did like that you said he's got the trident at this point. I see what you did there. I mean, Aquaman needs a trident as much as Wonder Woman needs a sword. It's just get these pointy things away from my classic characters.
Yeah, it is the most stabby thing you can get.
It is. I mean, blooming earth. I mean, it's so impractical. I mean, presumably he could take it off and have little attachments. But I mean, yeah. I mean, I know Peter Good David was wanting Aquaman to look a little bit more hardcore, but eaten by piranhas and replaced with a harpoon and this, that, and the other. Not good.
It was a different time.
It
Anyways,
was, it was.
we get a couple of really big splash pages of Aquaman in battle action with people in the background. I love these pages. They look great.
I do. I mean, the colouring is pretty affected by the two colours whose name I can't remember. But yeah, and in the background, the people are painted, almost painted with the colouring, and in the foreground, Aquaman, carrying that trident again in a very impractical manner. But yeah, he's got stabby things in both hands, and it's brilliant. But I mean, the next panel that I like on the digital reader at page 29 on DC's digital reader on the app, and it's just a lovely two-thirds of the spread of Aquitaine just sort of looking backward, thinking about the battle, watching the battle, and then three brilliant sort of top to bottom panels of Trafalgar general fighting and Meru using her powers against the bad apes again, the transformed Atlanteans. And I mean, I think if I could have one bit of artwork from this issue, I'd have this one. Is there anything that you particularly liked?
Oh yeah, and that is a fantastic page. It's since you've grabbed it already, I would choose to have, I think, page 14, which has the silhouetted ape fight between Tempest and Aquaman. Because
Oh yes, yeah, we did both admire that one. Yeah,
yeah, I really
that's a
like
pretty.
just the symmetry of that, and it's got the two panels of the fight, and then it has a small panel in the middle flanked by the women being horrified.
Yeah. I mean, I keep looking at it. What's the face, Dolphin? I think it's a dream girl.
Oh yeah, that
Came from
silver hair.
Dream Girl, Silverstone Cloud, Angel and the Ape Girl. They all look the same. Dumb Bunny. Well, Dumb Bunny was blonde, I think. But yeah, silver-haired ladies in comics—they're brilliant.
Yeah, I don't think she's as buxom as Dream Girl.
Well, it depends who's drawing Dream Girl, but yeah, Dolphin Jeremy, I think probably a little bit more svelte.
Yeah, but yeah, Aquaman then decides to let's cut the battle short by firing his trident, which so apparently it's a weapon, an energy weapon, into the giant
Apparently, has
crystal.
the power of Poseidon.
Yeah, into the eye of Poseidon, which is, it looks like a just a lid off a Tupperware container.
Yeah, I think it looks like maybe sort of facets of a jewel, but with half of it flat.
It's really, really big though, and it causes an explosion, and it sort of knocks it all the apes in the fight away, and Mera has to throw up a shield around a hard water cocoon around her and Dolphin, and it turns all the ape people back into people or Atlanteans. Atlanteans are people, let's be fair. Yeah, so everyone is fixed, and they all look kind of surprised that they're suddenly not apes, including our hero Aquaman. He is now back to his magnificent, goofy, overdrawn 90s self.
Absolutely. I think actually I do prefer him as the gorilla. He just looks so super serious here, whereas as a gorilla, he's just hokey and wacky and fun.
But some of the gorillas are having trouble breathing through their scuba gear, so I'm really confused at this point. But they decide to get the scuba gear off these gorillas before they drown. So then, yeah, so some of the gorillas have been turned into apes, into humans, who, yeah.
Into the very ugly humans. We're not ugly, sorry, no, we're all definitely beautiful. But into sort of very flat-faced, pug-nosed, well, ape-nosed, sharp-teethed humans.
Yeah, and it's like one of the, hey, you're one of us now. But in real life there'd be all sorts of adapting problems and prejudice and all sorts of crap like that coming down the line for these poor apes who are now people. But they seem quite happy to be Atlanteans, which anyway, that's probably not important right now.
It's fun though, isn't it?
Yeah, but Aquaman commands everyone, let's bring down the Kong, which is the submarine. And Trafalgar's not having it. He's going, mutiny, by thunder. We'll see about that. Open fire, level the city and everyone in
Yeah, you got this
it.
totally unthreatening looking Kong again, just blasting everybody. Doom, Batoom, Shatam, Katong, Katang. Well, that's Aquaman bashing the thing with his trident. But it's great. You got the defenders of Atlantis together. Tempest using his magical powers, Mira doing all sorts with her water powers. Dolphin off panel, of course she's pregnant. But it's a nice little climactic battle because you still got sort of Trafalgar. He's never going to submit, and it's just Aquaman looking pretty darn powerful and encased in energy for some kind of reason. I don't know, but it's just. I like that he gives me with a trident and says, you take charge, and that he's just going to go there because they've attacked his people, and he doesn't take kindly to that, and he's going to go and fight in the future chapter of the crossover.
Yeah, and the blasts, I love the red energy. The Alex Blay art really doing a great job on making them stand out in the issue. But yeah, it basically ends so suddenly. It's like, yeah, that's enough. Let's go conclude this somewhere else, which is, I think all the annuals were doing this. They would get to the end point and then say, to be continued in Martian Manhunter annual number two, where it sort of brings
it's
it all together.
It's a shame, though, because I haven't said John Ostrander, he was careful enough to sort of, you know, let new readers join the crossover. But then at the end, obviously, the editorial fiat means he can't finish the thing. And I'm sure John Ostrander could have finished this crossover. But as I say, The Martian Manhunter conclusion is an absolutely superb book.
I do remember that being the best of them. Yeah. So, yeah. What do you think of Jail Ape so far?
Pretty decent. I mean, all in all, I mean, this particular issue, I mean, a fun, you know, fun, efficient read. It doesn't really advance the main plot, but it's a fun time with great characters, smart action, nice personality interplay, and the character find of 1990 whatever, General Trafalgar.
Yeah. I mean, they don't seem to make him like this anymore. It's got a lot of goofiness played up for hijinks. And I mean, I think my only criticism of the entire issue would be the fact that I think the Kong, the submarine, doesn't look like it should on the cover. Like, on the cover, it looks spectacular. It looks like the most gorilla-faced submarine that ever existed.
Yeah.
But inside, it's kind of just a blobby. It's like a blobfish.
Yeah, it is, honestly. Well, I mean, I don't know whether the cover was done before or afterwards, but if the cover was done even after the issue, they should have just, you know, sent the pages with the Kong on to one of the production artists overnight and just said, you know, give that a bit of a makeover, because, you know, these are professional people. They have, you know, they could have sorted something out quickly even in those days, because the Kong's not in that many panels in the actual issue, and just make it look a bit sort of more like the cover, because that is spectacular. That is Chris Franklin would want that as a model toy. It's superb.
It would make a great toy, actually. Yeah, wouldn't it? Well, All right, that's probably it for our discussion of this issue. But if people want to find out more about what's happening in Jail April, so not everybody is doing Jail Ape. Everyone, you know, people who were free to do whatever they wanted. So they're picking comics with apes in them that they love or enjoy. So if you look for the hashtag Jail April, you can find that. So Martin, do you want to tell people what you do online and how people can find it?
Well, I do a blog called Too Dangerous for a Gorilla. Actually, no, Too Dangerous for a Girl. And that's just reviewing mainly DC comics, because people who read the blog don't seem to bother much with Marvel comics, but they're all lovely. That's the main thing. And you can find me online at Mart Grey on Twitter/X. Also at Dangerous 2. I'm on Blue Sky. You can find me under my name there. You can find me commenting all over the web, being annoying probably. I occasionally turn up on other people's podcasts because I haven't got one of my own because I'm too lazy. But I'd just like to say thank you for having me here, Paul.
Oh, no worries. I mean, you always expressed a desire to get in on a JL May, and you still haven't. So there you go.
A JL April will do. And, you know, maybe give it a few years and I'll practice, I'll get better, and I'll be worthy.
Yeah. And, yeah, you can find me around. I mean, social media, I've kind of given up. I'm on Blue Sky as Hicks, H-I-X. But, yeah, I mean, it would be really nice if you wanted to. You can buy us a coffee for our network, Waiting for Doom. Yeah, and that Mike and I will use that money to keep the show running. And but what also happens is if you buy us a coffee, you get to hang out with us in one of the Brew Crew chats, which happen every couple of months on Zoom. So they're lots of fun. And I'm hoping you'll make the next one, Mark, because you missed the last one.
I did miss the last one. I was probably doing something really, really important because nothing else could keep me away. But I need to buy you some more coffee first. Don't invite me until I buy you more coffee.
Okay, well, it's coming up soon. So, yeah, no, we'll get on that. But, yeah, basically, if you bought us a coffee in the past, you're in. So, yeah, don't worry. All right, thanks, everyone. And, yeah, I hope you enjoy more Jail April as we progress. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Celebrating the tradition of apes in comics, for 2024, Grodd has transformed JL May into JL April with a host of podcast all-stars. Look for the hashtag JLApril2024 on social media, the podcast crossover event that doesn't monkey around.
JL April.
Monkey around? Really?